everyone, and welcome to Pixel Chicken Team Up. I'm your host, Stryker, and with me I have Phil Colby.
Hey.
Phil Collins in the flesh.
Phil Collins, Genesis drummer, and I have Mr. Johnny.
Hey.
We are doing this podcast via Skype, which is not the norm. Don't worry, we won't do this forever like we used to. This is just a different type of circumstance, but today is our E3 extravaganza, as we have named it. We're going to be covering our E3 predictions and hopes and ideas.
And dreams.
Johnny's dreams of what he wants to do when he grows up. Yeah. And then on top of that, we're just going to go kind of quickly over some quick news items from this week that we felt like were worth talking about. And then we'll get right into it. And maybe at the end, possibly talk a little bit about The Witcher, although I don't think we're all that excited. I mean, we'll probably just leave that on the back burner for maybe some month later down the road. So how are you guys doing? Phil, how you doing?
Doing awesome. Had a good weekend. Having a decent Memorial Day. You know, kicking back, doing some reading, playing Witcher 3.
Now, did you eat any barbecue? Because that's what you're supposed to do today.
No, we didn't eat any barbecue. I wanted to, but my sister was like, "No, we need to save time because we got to do stuff around the house."
So, what did you eat?
Dairy Queen.
I mean, they grill the meat in the commercials.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess.
Johnny, how you doing?
I'm doing good, and I ate barbecue, and I spread a little goat cheese on a hamburger.
Sounds awesome.
That's the best way to eat a hamburger I discovered.
Interesting. I'm not a big fan of like sharp cheeses.
Goat cheese is really weird. I don't know. I had it at Little Big Burger, and it changed my world.
Is it pretty strong?
Too much of that stuff will make your stomach sick, but yeah, it's good to have every now and then.
It's pretty strong. It's really creamy. It's really rich. Yeah. But yeah, it's awesome. This is a goat cheese cast. We'll be discussing goat cheese for the next hour and a half.
I also had some barbecue myself, which was pretty good. I had a hot dog and a hamburger. I doubled up.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah.
That's good. I'm glad you guys are doing good.
I've been playing The Witcher like 12 hours straight in the last 2 days. So.
You know, I played it quite a bit.
All of us.
Yeah. Yeah, the other night I was up later than I've been in a long time playing The Witcher the other night. So I guess we'll just get right into the news and kind of get through it. And so we can get into the meat and bones, the meat and potatoes, the barbecued potato salad that Johnny loves.
Oh, God.
So our first news item on the list, Phil, you brought this to our attention, and that is a story that came out about Sega removing some mobile games from the iOS store, I believe it was.
Yeah, they're removing some games that apparently don't, quote, meet their standards. And, you know, I did read somewhere that these apps were like 5 years old, so that might have something to do with it. But on the other side of it, there are some gamers on YouTube who express concerns that maybe that they'll just put the games, what's to stop them from removing their games from PSN and then putting them back on, but you know, charging you extra to get like extra coins or extra points or a new level or whatever.
Right.
So nobody really knows what they're going to do. I don't, Sega doesn't have a good track record of making good decisions, right? So who knows? That might be the truth.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like just assuming that they're going to take their games off of the iOS store and then reintroduce them as pay-to-play games is kind of jumping to a pretty, pretty crazy conclusion. But, you know, it could be just for financial reasons. They just removed these games because they had them up and for a long time and had stopped selling very well. And I would imagine keeping them up on the iOS store can be pretty expensive to keep the license fresh and everything. So, you know, maybe that's just the only motivation behind the decision. Who knows? But
right. Well, I think that the big concern here is that Sega is, they make terrible decisions. And the fear is that it'll lead to a worse decision. I don't think many people actually care that it's off iOS. I mean, it could be just taking them off iOS to release some, Sega Arcade on iOS as an app that contains all these games within it or something silly. But
yeah.
But, like, they can't sell that well. They're emulated on, I guess not on iPhone. But, as somebody who's a fan of a lot of stuff Sega has, like, in their Japanese game catalog that they'll never bring over, or they're just doing weird things like taking stuff down or deciding to localize a game series like Yakuza for 4 entries and refusing to acknowledge it exists immediately after. I don't know. Sega makes terrible decisions, so I don't think this is really new, but if it's foreshadowing some other takedowns of their classic games, that would be a shame.
Yeah, taking them down on like the PlayStation Network and Xbox Live would really suck, because
I think I have a couple.
Yeah, I do too. I do too, and I like them. they're fun. There's some old classic games that get taken down, and I always hear about it when it's too late, and that always sucks, because they're games that I, at some point I would have liked to gone and purchased. And
there are games that got taken down and you can still play them if it's gotten taken down, other than, like PT.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, a game made here in Eugene, Marble Blast Ultra, was I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Awesome game. I know a few people that made it, but they took that off Xbox Live Arcade. It was like one of those four. It was cost like 400 Microsoft points ages ago, and I bought it. And there are still servers up for the game for the multiplayer, and there are still people playing it to this day. And they That's took crazy. The game off because the license was Garage Games closed down and moved somewhere else, and so the license dissolved. So the game can't be purchased. I don't even know if it can be re-downloaded, but it can be played online if you have it. And there are people who are... My friend got it, and he went online the other day because he's always been a big fan of it. And you can play it with other people. There actually is like 8 people playing when he tried.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot of these games like Golden Axe, they can still be pirated some way, right?
Yeah, you can still emulate those super easily.
Not on iOS, but I'm not pulling my hair out over that one. So.
Yeah. Just, if you want it that bad, get an Android phone.
The controls like crap on the phone anyways. So.
It's funny. I wonder how that works. That is like the former creator of that Marble Blast Ultra game just hosting a server in his garage still.
Yeah, I don't know where the server's coming from. Like, they're technically, they're gone.
They just forgot to turn off the electricity, and the server's still on in like the warehouse or something.
It's the only way to explain what's going on there.
Just really... hasn't had a Windows update in like 4 years. all right. So the next piece of news is something that's dear to my heart, and that's a certain supervillain. You guys may have heard of him. His name is M. Bison. Some call him Marvin Bison. Just kidding. Nobody calls him that. Anyway.
The sinister. Point is,
yeah. Isn't that sinister?
Yeah.
Marvin Bison.
Melvin. I think Melvin.
What do you feel about the people who say, well, actually, he should be referred to as Balrog?
Oh, you mean Vega?
Because of the legal shit.
Yeah, his name in Japan and all other countries, actually, is Vega. That's his original
name. Vega, I thought it was Balrog.
No, Balrog is the, in every other country except the U.S., Balrog is who we know as Vega, the guy with the claw and the mask.
That's right.
Yeah, so, Capcom released a trailer of M. Bison showing off some gameplay of Street Fighter V. They teased at him at the very end of the last trailer showing Charlie. So you kind of knew he was coming.
Did they tease another one at the end?
No,
of this?
They didn't, and I was kind of surprised at that, because they have in the last couple.
That's it. Confirmed. Those are all the characters we're going to get in Street Fighter V.
The rest you have to to pay for, a la Killer Instinct. God, that makes me sad.
Only $900 day one.
Disc already, too. Yeah, really? I love Killer Instinct. No, it's a joke, Phil. Don't worry.
Oh, you don't have to do that, then.
No, you do in Killer Instinct, but not in Street Fighter.
That really sucks.
Yeah, it's not a terrible concept. I would rather it just be everything, but anyway, they release gameplay, they show off M. Bison, he's got a ton of, like, new moves and mechanics, completely changing up, like, his strategy from what you traditionally think of as an M. Bison in these Street Fighter games. Seems
to be doing moves I never saw before.
Yeah, very different. And his look is different. They actually updated his character design, which I've mentioned in the past, but one thing I really hope out of this series is that not only... I hope that they're not afraid to change up the characters to, you know, that they're afraid they're going to, you know, drive away fans or something like that. I want them to evolve and change a little bit and, you know, have new looks and show their age and then new mechanics as well. That's one thing I really like about Mortal Kombat X that I would like to see most, really all fighting games do, especially one that's been around as long as Street Fighter. So I thought it looked really cool.
Speaking of Street Fighter, there's been a little bit of news since we last spoke. Yesterday they were talking about how at CEO Community Effort Orlando, the game is going to be playable. So in 1 month's time, Street Fighter V is playable. And guess what that means? Probably going to be playable at PAX, so I'll get to play it.
Oh, I hope so. Johnny, now you guys have to know that Johnny is going to be taking over our Twitter account and keeping us up to date from live from PAX when he is there running around and smelling like body odor.
Yes. That was my like seventh time going to PAX now, so I'm pretty efficient at getting everything done.
Yeah. PAX, when I don't even go to PAX, but when tickets go on sale, I get nervous for some reason. Like, it's weird. I don't know why that's my reaction. The whole world sweats. Yeah. The whole world sweats. That's the best way to describe it. So, M. Bison, Phil, what do you think about that? You think he looked cool?
Yeah, he looked cool. I'm glad they gave him the weight of age.
I am, too. He has gray hair.
His moves looked awesome. Every character that they revealed, every play style, and just the game in motion... Like, I haven't played that much Street Fighter. I like fighting games a lot. I like Street Fighter. I just never played it for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But this game is on my radar for sure. So,
you know, Johnny, I should tell you that on Tuesday, Street Fighter 4, the PS4 version, is coming out. And it's only going to be like $25 new.
I have it on the PC, but I mean, I'd rather play with the PS4 controller.
Yeah. So. I'm planning on getting it. I have some trading credit I'm going to use on it. Anyway, excited about that. Excited about Bison.
I got a little piece of recent news that I found out literally an hour before this podcast.
Yeah, hit me with it.
Not a horror game, but a Gone Home-esque game got announced called What Remains of Edith Finch. There was a trailer for that. I don't think you know that. There was a trailer for the game. That just revealed, and it looks really atmospheric. It's for the PS4, and it's made by Giant Sparrow that did Unfinished Swan.
Interesting.
I like those little short atmospheric romps that just tell a suspense story, like Vanishing of Ethan Carter. And I just started playing Gone Home literally right after I saw this trailer. I'm like, I'm in the mood for Gone Home. I bought it and I never played it. I heard it was like an hour long.
Yeah.
So I played a little bit of it, and I'm going to finish it after this. But
I just like the name of that game. It sounds very mysterious.
What Remains of Edith. Yeah, the premise is that, like, there's this family called the Finch family, and everybody in this family has died in a weird way. They're like a cursed family, and so you kind of, like, go through short stories of each family member's death, and you're playing as, like, the last remaining daughter in the family, like, investigating all this. So it's a pretty intriguing plot. I don't know. I'm interested. I like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Lo
and behold, it takes place in... It's made in Portland, Oregon. It takes place in Portland, Oregon.
Wait, What Remains of Edith Finch?
Gone Home.
Gone Home is, yes. Yeah, I started that up, and yeah, the game is set in Oregon. What's with all these weird, like, slice of life-ish games set in Oregon? Because there's Life is Strange.
Yeah.
Is set in, like, Newport kind of town, and it's set in Oregon.
Well, I mean, if you think about, like, the scenery at a lot of places in Oregon, they're very, they're the kind of places that you think about when you're, that a lot of, like a Stephen King book, for example.
Like, yeah, a lot of mystery novels
yeah,
and stuff have
yeah,
that.
Yeah, things like that.
Alan Wake was based off a town
exactly,
in Oregon.
Exactly, yes. That's a perfect example. Johnny, I'll let you handle this. Also, another announcement, a certain racing title.
Oh, yeah. Need for Speed reboot's coming in. I'm not a big racing fan. I like arcadey, blow-em-up kind of racing, and that's what the last Need for Speed reboot was. They showed the trailer, and it's basically a remake of Underground 2, which is a lot of people's favorite.
That's my personal favorite. I fucking loved that game so much.
Yeah, most people did. It's the that one and, like, the not the most recent, the most recent DICE one that was running on Frostbite Engine. Because DICE did the last three Need for Speed games, and they did a really good job with the first two. But then the third one was kind of a fart. Mm-hmm. But the second one, first one, the Most Wanted and whatever the other one was, those were awesome. I played those. So, I mean, I don't really need it to be rebooted, but hey, that's cool. It looks pretty. Underground is good. So, yeah, Need for Speed's like the only racing series I would like kind of follow. So.
Yeah, I loved Underground 2. I liked the other Need for Speed games in the past, but I never dumped hours into. I've played a lot of racing games, but Underground 2, I just dumped so much time into that. That was like the perfect storm for me at that time, and I don't know why, but it just...
That's just how Underground is designed. It's designed to be a time sink racer.
Yeah, and it was.
And that's why a lot of people like it, is because you can do a ton in it, and like it has a good single player, it keeps you unlocking stuff. The one I played, the reboot that DICE did that was really fun, was also really shallow. Like, I played it for like 6 hours in one sitting, and I was like, man, that was a blast. And then I never touched it again, because pretty much all the sweet cars are just left on the roadside, and you just kind of like drive around and get in them, and like, ooh, I got a Porsche now. It's free.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, you're just driving a Porsche. So it's like, you just kind of like fiddle around in the open world, fiddle around online.
Interesting.
Okay, 6 hours have passed. It was a blast, but you know, it's done.
What do you like racing games, Phil?
I like them fine. I mean, I grew up with my dad playing Gran Turismo. I don't have as much experience with them, but I've always been open to getting into one. You know.
You know,
yeah, I'm terrible at them.
I remember coming over to your house when I was young, and I remember I would always see your dad playing one of the three games I remember most: Soul Calibur,
mm-hmm.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and Gran Turismo.
Yeah, those are the three games he was really into at that time.
I remember
Soul Calibur and Gran Turismo. That was what got me into the PS2 era.
Yeah. Now this piece of news is very exciting. Now they've announced that there is going to be one. They haven't announced anything about it, but a Bloodborne expansion.
Oh yeah.
What do you think about this, Johnny? Cause I'm just overwhelmed.
Yeah, so it was we were talking about this, and like when Dark Souls 2, like when I finished that game, I was really satisfied, I didn't need much more, and all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, Bloodborne comes out next year and it looks amazing, and it was 10 times better than Dark Souls 2. Did I say Dark Souls 2 or did I say Soul Calibur 2? I think I got Soul Calibur on the brain. Anyway, Dark Souls 2, so I was pretty pumped for Bloodborne, but like I was not expecting it, and I beat Bloodborne and I'm once again totally satisfied, and an expansion, like I didn't even consider that as a possibility.
Neither did I.
I didn't realize how much I want it. I figured they'd do some little DLCs and be like, oh, it's okay, it's a DLC. I mean, like, that's what they did with Dark Souls. But an expansion just sounds perfect.
I just am so curious.
You guys put...
Go ahead, Phil, sorry.
I was going to say, you guys put hours into that game, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like you couldn't ask for more. So, what's the difference between a DLC and an expansion?
Expansion is usually like a quarter to half the game's length and costs roughly $20 to $30. And that's just how they did any sort of adding on to the game to any game back then. I grew up as a PC gamer, so a lot of RTSs and RPGs and stuff would release expansions. Even shooters like Half-Life 1. And it's like basically they just took the game and since it was cheap to do, they made another follow-up with it, or just usually about the same length or half the length, and it costs half as much. But it's not expected to be, you know, like a big full sequel. That's how I prefer adding on to games. DLC, I think, is too bite-sized. But an expansion is like another full experience you can look forward to.
DLC is too, and a lot of times for me personally, I feel like DLC is too small for me to pick the game back up.
Yeah.
Whereas an expansion, I would pick the game back up for that if I liked it well enough.
There are some people out there who are constantly picking games back up and are constantly like, you know, the game is still on their radar even after they beat it. I don't really get that.
I just can't do it.
No way.
I can't bring myself to get that interested again.
When I'm done, I'm done. So I remember, you know, I'll get RPGs and stuff, and I'll beat them. Like, I remember Dragon Age 1, I beat the game, and there was some launch day DLC that I did. But other than that, like, there was no other DLC. There was, like, six major DLC pieces and a full-fledged expansion pack, and I kind of was interested in the expansion. I never got into any of that DLC, even though they said it was, oh, it's amazing DLC, it's so good. I, like, couldn't get myself to, even if I did buy it, like, I'd start it up and be like, I'm not feeling it. Like,
yeah. I really wonder where they are going to go with this expansion. Like, it's just mind-boggling to me to think, because there's so many places, because the story is so vague in the game, that they can,
you know, whatever it is they're going to do, they're going to throw you in some region. I, like we were saying last time we were talking about this, they could probably throw us into this realm of the cosmos or something just twisted,
yeah,
and psychotic.
Something,
that would be awesome.
God, something just in on of abandons. Just make it Dead Space.
Yeah, basically.
I hope not. Another piece of news, which I hesitate to even call it news because it's more of just like speculation, but Rockstar San Diego has posted some job listings and asking for certain things that are teasing at maybe their next game, like whatever they're going to be working on. And what they're asking of in their job listings kind of makes it sound like it's going to be a large open world game with a lot of multiplayer elements injected into everything. And some people, you know, we hope, obviously, that it's going to be a sequel to Red Dead Redemption. Phil, you were just talking about Red Dead Redemption. What would you think about a sequel to it? And let me also ask you, if there was a large multiplayer component, what would you want that to look like?
First answer would be yes. I'm totally up in arms for a new Red Dead game. It'd be a matter of what era we would take place in. And, you know,
it would have to go back. It would have to,
yeah,
go back.
Yeah. It couldn't be a direct sequel, or else it would just be like a prohibition game.
would
they be willing to look past the fact that some guns during that time, though, weren't as advanced, didn't have as much range? I wonder how they find their way around that. But other than that, no, I'd be totally willing to pick up a new Red Dead game. Sounds great. As far as a multiplayer experience goes, I would want to, you know, do train heists. You know, I would like to see stuff like that happen. Because I understand that the multiplayer in the last Red Dead didn't really have that, right? You there?
Misinformed. Sorry, I was waiting for Johnny to answer you because I wanted.
It did. Did you not play the multiplayer in Red Dead?
I played it a little bit, and I got killed.
Yeah,
you got killed one time, and then you.
Yeah, I got killed all the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and pretty much.
By the time I finally got Red Dead Redemption on the PlayStation, it had been, you know, hacked and shit. So.
Yeah, Red Dead Redemption did a really good job with its online. I actually thought it was a big step up from GTA 4. It's just that it was really easy to not play it the way it was intended. And so I would hop online and be like, I can't wait to experience my dream, you know, online experience that they advertised in that video. And it was really just sort of people running around shooting each other for no reason.
Exactly.
They're supposed to form posses and kind of role play a little bit, which is what I'm into, but like nobody else is. So really you'd have to have like a dedicated group of friends to just like, you know, hang out in the West and ride around and do a mission here. And like they built it like an MMO, but it was too free to the point where nobody's creative enough to play it.
They need to kind of force some of those things or else it's just going to become a crazy free for all.
Yeah. And so that's just what it was. And a lot of people did get some good times out of it. There were like guilds you could join online where people would get on at a certain time and ride around and fight other guilds. And it was awesome. But like, yeah, I'd love to see them improve that because it definitely had a lot of room for improvement. But it was almost there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just remember getting killed by every person I came across.
Yeah. That's the thing about Red Dead is that Red Dead is kind of like The Witcher 3 or some other game that's a big game that feels like it's in the final chapter of, you know, the story. It's like, where can they really go from here? Because Red Dead was all about the death of the West, the heralding in a new era. And there's all sorts of sweet guns. Like, you had every gun from the entire time span of the West, like, to the point where you had repeating pistols and rifles and stuff. Towards the end of the game and all this new technology and stuff like that. So it's like, if you were to make a new Red Dead game, you couldn't like make it a success or a sequel in timeline because then it would be boring. Like, or it wouldn't be boring, but I wouldn't appreciate that time period as much.
I think they'd have to have the character switching from GTA 5. Because I think we had talked about this before on a past episode, but I had speculated, or maybe I don't remember, Johnny, if you and I talked about this at some point at work, but we had talked about how it would be cool to play, you know, like as certain archetypes, like an aging Western hero a la Clint Eastwood and like Unforgiven or something that comes out of retirement for like one last bounty or. Because his friend needs help, and then you play as like a young up and coming, you know, dumb kid straight out of the Civil War or something like that, different things like that, just different archetypes of Western characters. And there's still a lot you could do with that. But with that said, if Rockstar San Diego was working on a completely different type of game, what would you guys want to see from that? Like, what's something that you think would be cool?
I wish that it was the espionage game, The Agency.
Right.
Is that what it's called?
I think so. So The Agent or Agent something. I don't remember. It was something with agents in the title.
That would be cool.
That would be awesome.
That game.
Espionage game.
Could you imagine a Rockstar handled James Bond styled espionage game?
Oh, God.
With like that specific style. Oh, man. That would be awesome.
Incredible. Phil, I think you also said like game. I think you also said like a Rockstar samurai game, like in feudal Japan. That would be sweet.
See, that would be sweet, but here's the problem I'd see with that, is that Rockstar is very familiar with very realistic and Western storytelling.
Very much so, that's true.
Well, that's really all that they're excellent at.
That we know of. Yeah, that we know of, though.
You know, Kung Fu movies and spaghetti Westerns, I mean, they have a lot in common. and true. Their directors have influenced each other, right?
But yeah, but Red Dead is, it has a lot of spaghetti western elements, but the main heart of the story is very GTA-ish. And so it's like with a samurai game, I feel like a lot of, kind of like when I played Jade Empire, I felt like something was lost when I'm playing a Western-made RPG based on Asian stereotypes and with English voice actors with cheesy accents. As cool as the game is, I feel like Rockstar's got a very classy way of designing or of doing dialogue that's really realistic and well-handled that no other developers have. And I feel like you'd kind of lose that unless you'd go for, like, you know, Japanese voice acting with subtitles, which would turn off, like, 80% of the crowd. I would love it to death.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
I don't see them financially being backed for something so risky.
They're definitely heavily influenced by Western culture, Western pop culture, and Western storytelling. I mean, you know, even if it's Red Dead, that's still very much the case. So,
I was thinking, like, you know, a cyberpunk kind of thing maybe, or some, because they're kings of the open world. What other open world things would I want? But I don't really need them to do all of the. I don't really want them to do anything unrealistic, because not that they couldn't, but they're really good at that. At that classic film type of storytelling. So I feel like since they're the only ones that really do that, I wouldn't mind it if they just kept doing that.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind either. So
yeah,
that would be cool. Who knows? It could be a completely different thing than what we are thinking. It could be like a fucking Rockstar RTS for all we know.
Hey, could be Max Payne 4.
Hey, could be. Well, guys, let's get into the E3 extravaganza. What do you say?
Yeah.
Phil, you okay with that?
More than okay with it.
Okay. Because I'm not so sure, Phil, by your yeah. attitude.
Are you okay, Phil?
You all right?
No, fuck this thing. I don't want to talk about fucking E3.
Well, let's get right into it then, I guess. Let's talk first about what games we think we're going to see at E3 and what games we want to see at E3. I think that they'll kind of go hand in hand, because some games obviously have been announced that they're already going to be there, and some aren't. Phil, you talked about this early on. I think you talked about it in a previous episode or something, but you mentioned wanting to see a new Hitman game, which is very possible, since Square Enix is... They're publishers, right? They're
publishers. And they did announce that it was going to be announced this year. I haven't read anything about whether or not it's going to be announced at E3. There's a little bit of concept art, you know.
Right.
Say 47 standing in front of, like, a flight schedule or something in it. And it looks dramatic and badass as always. But there's a quote next to it. One of the representatives saying, quote, "We've adopted an open nonlinear level design approach to the game, ensuring the game will play out across huge checkpoint-free sandbox levels. Our aim is to create living, breathing, and believable levels, which will allow gamers to play around with the AI to create those unique moments every fan of Hitman franchise loves." So it looks like they're going to really hopefully expand upon everything they've done with expand past what they've done with Absolution.
Very cool. What would you like to see from a sequel? I mean, what would you like to see story-wise, and what would you like to see gameplay-wise from the new Hitman?
I would like we've already seen him on the run. Now I just want to see him, see how he can... He seems like a guy... I mean, it's going to be weird to say... he's been doing what he's been doing for a very long time. So, you know...
Like 7 months, I think, right?
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I thought you knew something about the franchise that I didn't. But yeah, he's been doing what he's been doing for a very long time. So, you know, I'd be interesting to see what they would do with Victoria, who survives Hitman Absolution and turns out to, you know, have a lot of potential to be a killer in her own right. So something could probably go down that direction. But I still would like to be playing with 47 throughout most of the game. just you know, I mean, what else is there? I wonder what else is there to do with them. He knows what he does, and he's very good at it.
So, yeah, I could definitely see them introducing like a new character, because, like you said, he's already been through pretty much every story thing you could think of, and so maybe they will introduce a new character. That'd be kind of cool, maybe, if it's done well.
Yeah, if it's done well, and we'll see where they take it.
What do you think about like gameplay wise? Do you want to see more of like what's one mission that stood out from Absolution that you would like to see more of, or from even the past games?
The Chinatown mission was great, but at the same time, the gas station mission was also really fun.
That's a good player.
A lot of great place to kill people there. Let's see, and I think even though I don't mind the kind of linear aspects to Absolution, you know, I do want to see more of a free roam approach to.
I was thinking that too. I think they're kind of due for an open world Hitman sort of.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite parts of Hitman is, you know, when it's incredibly specific and just a small sectioned off level. But I think that in the way the series is headed, it would totally work to have almost like an open world Hitman. Or I haven't really played much of the recent ones, so like, would that make sense based on the last game to have like an open world Hitman?
To me, it would.
I think that it would make sense no matter what. I mean, for an open world type of, and it doesn't have to be.
It's even kind of, the first Hitman kind of felt open. Like,
it was
in open cities and stuff.
Yeah, the first Hitman had these huge like parts of the city where you could completely go out of the way.
Actually,
At the same time, it can't be like necessarily like GTA where 47 could just jump in a car and start running people over and, you know, raise his crime rate or whatever. There still has to be a sort of a direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be. I don't know if technically like a traditional open world game in the sense of like a GTA or like a Watch Dogs would work in the Hitman universe, but having a very large playground type of level, almost maybe like a Ground Zeroes type of thing, would work well. And think about it this way, like, think of how cool it would be to have a Hitman game where it basically says, okay, at midnight, this guy, your target is going to travel from this location to this location and get out of his car and walk into a club or something, and it's up to you to figure out where along the line you want to attack. Like, if you want to go up on a rooftop and try to snipe him, or if you want to go to the club and disguise yourself, or anywhere along the line, if you want to create like a, you know, like a distraction for his, you know, caravan of vehicles and stuff. Just something like that would be, I feel like the series would lend itself really well to that style of gameplay and freedom.
Yeah.
That seems to be the proper direction for it. Yeah, I love the Ground Zeroes idea.
Did anybody ever get to Act 2 of the first Hitman game where you get to the jungle?
Oh, I've never played the first
one. I think that I did, but it's been so long that I honestly can't remember. I'm pretty sure I got at least that far.
It's so bad that it's funny.
I know, like, in fact, I know 100% sure that I did now that I think about it.
It's the most bizarre change in game design because it is open world. And so it's like you do the first missions in Chinatown and they're amazing. They're super fun even to this day, even though they're really awkward. They're really memorable. And you're done with that and they send you to the jungle and it's just like miles of nothing. Like there's this jungly terrain and there's no vehicle or anything. So you're just running through trees and if you lose, if you die, you gotta do it all over again.
That's what I remember most about the first Hitman is having way too much space. Like, to the point where it's like...
Well, Chinatown wasn't. Chinatown was really tight, but it felt big. And then you get to the jungle, and it's just bizarre how terribly designed it was.
I remember that very, very well. What a weird game.
It's pretty awesome, whatever it is. Yeah. I wish that they took some more... elements from that into other games, because I liked a lot of the incredibly specific ways to take down enemies. You had to be creative and kind of like force yourself into learning all of what the game needed you to do to even win, because there's only one way out.
Yeah, and it did not hold your hand. It basically just like kind of let you loose.
It's a trial and error game. You lose, you lose, you lose, you lose, you lose. And you're like, I'm gonna win. I've gotta get it. It's like, oh, I gotta drag that body into the sewer this time and not into the alleyway because there's a car that goes through the alley.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The final level in Chinatown was like this massive compound with like 800 steps to beat the level. It was awesome. You know, save some woman or something. It was really weird. The voice acting was terrible.
Yeah, the first game was, you could definitely tell playing the first game.
Is it
game.
The same voice actor?
For him, yes. But for the Chinese people, they were really, really, I don't want to say racist, but they were caricatures for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely made on a budget.
It was a very experimental game. There's a lot of passion that you could tell in it. It's pretty cool.
Another sequel that they've teased that's most likely, I mean, I think we can pretty much assume it's going to be at the Bethesda conference, unlike a different sequel we'll talk about later, is Doom 4. They released actually like a little bit, like a little trailer last week that we've all seen at this point. What do you guys want to see out of a Doom sequel, like a new iteration in the Doom franchise?
Well, I think it's pretty important that it doesn't try to be, say, like Gears of War, where you hide behind like a corner and shoot from the corner. You know, I have read that they want to make you know, a kind of an adrenaline filled run gun. You know, it's just a straight up game, a video game, a fun first person shooter. Period.
Yeah, like an arcade-y style. I'm kind of hoping, because there've been a few recent FPS reboot sort of games. Like there was a Shadow Warrior. And Wolfenstein New Order, and Shadow Warrior was all out, and also Rise of the Triad, they both had sort of reboots, and they were relatively well received, but in the end they were like literally the same idea as the sprite based shooter, where it's just like an open level, you can dual wield giant guns, hold a million guns at once. You know, all the classic sprite shooter concepts, which I grew up with sprite-based shooters, by the way, and so that kind of thing is still a lot of fun to me, but they don't sell very well. But then Wolfenstein took that, like, oh, well, let's just go really basic with this, make it fun, make it silly, dual-wield shotguns, blow Nazis' legs off. And I think that Doom would do well to have that and that same kind of endearing storytelling.
So long as it's not like Rage. Right.
So yeah, and basically, because we were talking, there's that one trailer that kind of got leaked of the canceled Doom 4, and it looked like Rage. It looked like photorealistic, tons of brown, as hell on earth. So it's just a bunch of Marines going oorah with their realistic machine guns,
which shooting. You know, it would make sense at the time, because you know, Doom 2 was hell on earth, right?
Oh, yeah. So Doom 3 was basically a remake of Doom 1's story, and Doom 4 is a remake of Doom 2's story, which is, you know, the Hell on Earth thing. So that's probably what we're going to see here. But it's just the way they went about it was totally not Doom. You know, it was all outdoors and, you know, during the daytime, and it's just stuff that I don't, like, Doom is a very metal game, you know? It's very hardcore.
It's a, you're fucking running metal through song.
Yes, it's incredibly specific in that you're constantly running through, blasting the crap out of tons of gross demons. You're in hell, you're on a space station that's connected to hell, you know, everything's dark or reddish or over the top, and it needs to retain that hardcore, like, yeah, that overly masculine adrenaline rush But even if it does have that, like, I after playing Wolfenstein: The New Order, I feel like I can't get too excited about this because I don't trust id Soft anymore that has as much to make a game. Whereas Machine Games, who did Wolfenstein and Chronicles of Riddick and The Darkness, are really good at making a first-person game that's basic, that tells a good story, and is really memorable.
Yes, they are. They're fantastic at their craft. Like, what they do incredibly well.
If they were making this new Doom game, I would be so excited, but because it's not them, I can't get that excited. They did show a tiny little teaser of a guy reloading a double-barreled shotgun and an over-the-top silly alien shooting rockets out of a backpack. So that's promising. The color scheme is very colorful, it's got a lot of reds in it and stuff. So that little snippet makes it look more appealing than what they had before. So yeah, it could be a good game. I don't imagine it'll be a great game, but I'd love to be surprised.
Yeah, I definitely think it needs to go more the route that Wolfenstein went than any other shooter, especially Rage.
I'd love to see more shooters go the route Wolfenstein went.
Yes, it was just great. It was they did it perfectly. The way that it was, it catered to the old school fan while still being great by today's standards. You know, it wasn't just a good game for us because we like those sort of shooters. It was just a great game.
I love how nobody realized how awesome the Wolfenstein was until like a year after it came out.
Yeah.
It was really weird. Like, even the critics were like a mixed bag between awesome and like, yeah, it's okay. And then I'm like, oh, okay, well, it was, you know, the new Thief came out like right at that time. That was kind of, that was a fart. So I just
the
was
Thief
not.
The game before that was kind of panned too, right?
Deadly Shadows?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, which is funny because it's my favorite Thief game, but Deadly Shadows was it had a lot of awesome. Deadly Shadows was like a weird departure for the series, but it was still a Thief game. It had awesome atmosphere and some of the best scary levels in a video game. But this new Thief was just, it was very heartless. I didn't care at all about it.
Yeah. Let's see. What do you guys think about seeing more Metal Gear at E3?
Go ahead, Johnny. Go first.
Oh, sorry. I don't really want to see any more Metal Gear at
E3. Yeah. I don't want to see any more until I see the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I think I'm with you guys on that. We've talked about this and mentioned at some point or another that at this point we've almost seen like too much Metal Gear because
too much too long ago.
Yeah.
It's a full year since we've seen anything substantial, and if you think about it, we've seen a lot of substantial stuff. It's weird to me to think that we were technically playing Metal Gear Solid 5 over a year ago, like,
yeah,
with Ground Zeroes.
Like, yeah, that is weird to think.
Game, and there's still a lot left to be revealed as we play it. So.
What if they show off just Metal Gear Online stuff? Would you guys be upset at that if it's just strictly Metal Gear Online?
No, I really wouldn't.
I wouldn't be itching for it, though. They showed that little snippet of stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll play that. But
yeah, I'm not going to get excited about it. I don't really care about the... I mean, the online portion will be cool, but I'm not... That part I don't care about. But if they do show off Metal Gear gameplay, I would rather they focus on that than just give away more of the single-player stuff.
They sold me and all of the Metal Gear fans the moment they announced the game. They really...
Yeah, seriously.
They could have gone the Persona 5 route and shown literally nothing until the day before the game is releasing, pretty much.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to buy it anyways because they want it. Like,
yeah, I'm with you on that one. Speaking of Persona 5, what about that, Johnny? You have now, obviously, they might show something at E3 for that game. And if they do, what would you like to see? Obviously, I'm sure you'd like to see a actual like set in stone release date. But
yeah.
Besides that, what else?
We pretty much know what's going to be at E3 for Persona 5, and that's at the end of June. There is a Blu-ray disc releasing with the Persona 4 Dancing All Night rhythm game. Have you seen that game?
No.
Oh, God, it's incredible. The spinoffs for Persona are bizarre. And they're all, like, technically canon, according to the plot. Like, they're all sequels to Persona 4, like, the fighting game and stuff. And it's just stupid.
I'm convinced that they're going to create an actual town as part of the publicity for this game. They're going to create a Persona town in Japan and open it to the public before the game comes out.
Their PR for this game is, or for their games, is bizarre. But yeah, there's a Blu-ray disc coming in for the Japanese people in on June 28th or whatever, for the release of that rhythm game. And it's going to have some preview for Persona 5. Nobody knows what. Probably a release date, because it's supposed to release in the fall. But as far as we get at E3, since E3 is a Western press conference, we'll probably get a translated or localized version of the trailer that came out in February. So nothing big. But if they show the Persona 5 trailer at, like, the Sony press conference, everyone's mind will be blown, because Persona is not a series that gets publicity. It's a very popular niche thing.
Yeah.
Amongst, like, you know, a lot of people that don't like JRPGs still like Persona. It's like the most popular JRPG that isn't Final Fantasy right now.
You sold me on it. Yeah. You sold me on it this weekend. I'm in the mood for something weird and cerebral.
You should check out. They're both on PSN for $10 a piece, Persona 3 and 4. And just be warned, they're not that easy to get into at first, but once you, because the gameplay doesn't get, like, handed to you until, like, like 4 hours in or something. But the story is very intriguing, and once you're in it, it's hard to get out. It's, but they're, you know, this Persona 5 is a lot more, you know, the last two were PS2 games based on a, you know, they had no anticipation that it was ever going to be popular at all, because none of their games are. All their games are passion projects. So, you know, it's very hard to get into, but this new one looks like it's something that a lot of people will want to play, which is crazy, because if you look at Atlus's best-selling game, it's Demon's Souls, which accidentally sold too much. Like, it sold so much that they couldn't handle it, and they had to get the IP to Bandai Namco to do Dark Souls. That's the only reason why we never got Demon's Souls 2. And Demon's Souls sold, like, what, 1.5 million? I think Persona 4 sold a million. So if Persona 5 is successful at all, that would be crazy.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
There's a poll done, and it's currently the most anticipated game in Japan.
Nice.
Wow.
Beating out Final Fantasy 15, Pokemon.
That's incredible to me.
Yeah, it's like, there's a reason for it, and people are catching on, and it makes me so happy, because the Shin Megami Tensei franchise has been going on since the 80s. There's been a billion games. Everybody knows about it because a lot of them are critically acclaimed, but, like, they're really hardcore. So even in Japan, they don't sell. Like, they're just well-known, and they just keep pumping them out. But and Phil just died, I think.
Phil, you all right? You dead?
Sorry.
It's all right, man. Interesting. Another game, Johnny, why don't you have to tell me a little bit about this, because I don't know as much, but Scalebound is another game that you mentioned you would like to see more of at E3.
Yeah, we were talking. Was Scalebound announced 2 years ago?
I think it was. It's hard because E3 is sometimes run together for me. I forget that the new consoles have been out as long as they have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Let's see, Scalebound. Yeah, I believe it was announced a couple of years ago, and so Platinum Games is doing it. It's Xbox One exclusive. I highly doubt that whatever it is going to be something that I'm going to want to buy an Xbox One for. But the Xbox One needs a lot. So
yes,
having another game, you know, Platinum's doing it. I only really like Platinum when they do weird, quirky, incredibly over-the-top stuff like Bayonetta and Devil May Cry. I didn't like Metal Gear that much, Revengeance. But, so, yeah, this has got some focus on dragons and some woman as the playable character, but we don't know much about it, so I don't know. Could be good. But
I like Platinum, and I would hope that it'd be nice to see what they do with the new technology, because the only game we've seen from them on technically this generation was on the Wii U, and I mean the Wii U is not impressive technologically, so it'll be cool to see what they can do with more resources.
So I'm looking at a screenshot here, and you play as a dude, not a woman, with like what appears to be like a dragon arm thing, and it looks like near. You look like a Devil May Cry character. You look like,
yeah.
And he's got like a sword. He's got a bow and arrow and a sword strapped to his back, and like a dragon demon arm.
Right, and a bow and arrow.
That's kind of cool.
It is cool.
He kind of looks like DMC Dante though. He's got like a pair of beats around his. I didn't know. I didn't see any of this before. Huh. Yeah, I'll have to look back at that. But yeah, what were you saying?
Nothing. I'm excited to see what Platinum can do with more power and more resources from the new generation of consoles. That's always all I'm saying.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad to me to see Platinum pushing or developing an Xbox One exclusive title, not because because it just reminds me of Lost Odyssey. I hate it when Microsoft tries to get Japan to buy their system by having famous Japanese developers make an exclusive that'll never be played in Japan. So Scalebound is just the best thing Platinum's ever done. Japan's never going to see it. And therefore, it's never going to get a sequel unless Microsoft 100% funds it, which it'll probably be too niche for that or something.
Right.
So,
hey, maybe it'll be a system seller in Japan. Just kidding.
Yeah. That Lost Odyssey was expected to be like the next Final Fantasy for Xbox 360. And you know what? It was. It was better than any Final Fantasy we'd had in years. And nobody bought it in Japan. Nobody knows how good it is. And it's one of the best JRPGs ever made.
Now, are you guys familiar with a game called Rime that got announced? I think it was it last year or the year before? Now I can't even remember that.
Rime.
Yeah, it was announced at the E3 conference. It might have been 2 years ago too for this game. I can't remember now.
Oh, RIME.
Yes, RIME. It's made by by Tequila Works, which I'm trying to remember what else they've developed.
Oh, this game looks awesome. I remember seeing it. Yeah, this is 2013.
Yeah. Yeah, I will hope to see more of this game, because I remember when I first saw it, it looked very interesting to me, and it just had a very unique style about it. It kind of reminded me of Journey in a way, because it was very sort of quiet and very atmospheric.
It's literally Ico meets Wind Waker.
Yeah, that's what I
was... Yeah, there you go. Ico is a better example.
Yeah, the aqueducts and all that, mm-hmm. that have that same design staple. I don't know what it is with Shadow of the Colossus and Team Ico's, because they had those original designs with, like, the architecture of the fallen civilization with those towering aqueduct things and spires. Yeah. And Journey did that. Now this game's doing that. I don't mind.
I think it's just, I mean, it's incredibly, like, visually stunning to see it. And I think that people understand that now after playing Shadow of the Colossus. And I'm just looking at a screenshot of this game. It looks so crazy.
I just played the trailer, and it's got some really awesome music.
Yeah, it does. That was the other thing. I remember that very well, the music. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see more games. Just in general, I'd like to see more games like this. Just some new IPs that are just kind of random and unique and take their chances. We need a lot of more new IPs at this
E3. We won't see this at E3, but do you remember that game? I think you sent me the trailer for it, and it was an airship game. It was like Sid Meier's Pirates on an airship. And I believe you sent me that at work like a time ago.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I wish. What was the name?
I'll be able to remember it. I have it saved somewhere here. I went back and rewatched that trailer, and I went to the website, and there hasn't been any news on it. I'm gonna try to get the name here. This is a while ago. Jeez.
Yeah. While you're looking that up, I'm just going to say it because it's obvious. I'd like to see two games that are pretty obvious. I want to see more, maybe a little bit more Uncharted and Street Fighter V especially. Street Fighter V is a game that I actually, it's not going to spoil anything to see Street Fighter V in action. So that is a game I'd love to see just more footage of. I want to see more of the mechanics. I want to see kind of, it's still kind of hard to tell from some of like the trailers and stuff because they're very offensive.
But you also want to see more Street Fighter 3 characters, right?
Yes, that's a good point.
That sounds good too.
I'd really like to see more of them take more from Street Fighter 3, more characters, and Street Fighter 3 had a very unique style, and I kind of like to see them change it up a bit and maybe pull some things from that. Very like artistically, it was very different from the other series and possibly even a little too different. So, I mean, I'd like a happy medium between that and what 4 was, but I'd like to see more gameplay of 5, more characters introduced. You know, maybe some new characters, but maybe not, because I wasn't a big fan of any of the new characters in Street Fighter 4 that I can think of.
We talked about Mortal Kombat X and how each character feels like they would be a Mortal Kombat character.
Yeah.
And yes. Street Fighter 4 seems to lack that. The franchise seems to lack that.
Yeah, it's just Street Fighter 4. I think that like Alpha had some new characters that were cool, but I think the coolest ones were pulled from other franchises. I think that, and I said it before, Mortal Kombat X has the best cast of new characters that's ever been introduced in a fighting game, in my opinion. Other than like the first iteration of a fighting game, like a sequel. So I still stand by that.
I think Soul Calibur 5 beats you. It's got Alpha Patroclus, Beta Patroclus, or if that's even how you pronounce his name, Gamma Patroclus. Who could forget?
Who could forget?
I have fallen out of the Soul Calibur franchise.
Yeah, it wasn't worth playing after 3, really.
They haven't released a game in a while now, anyway, so.
Yeah, 4 had some really good elements to it. 3 had some good elements. 2 was the best, but 5 was just was pretty lame.
Yeah, it was pretty lame.
The gameplay like had a good engine upgrade too. Like it was pretty impressive, the gameplay of 5, but the cast and all of the single player components and stuff and the weird parallaxing on the maps was just bad.
Yeah.
You did everything in the game in like 2 seconds and you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to take this online and suck at it. The game I was thinking of about the airship, Sid Meier's Pirates, is called 20,000 Leagues Above the Clouds. And I rewatched the trailer recently. It just looks really atmospheric and awesome, and there hasn't been a snippet of news for a year. I've been signed up for the beta this whole time.
Man, I'm looking at it now, yeah.
It's like the game has like some really sweet like races and it was like a sci-fi-ish thing, almost.
It looks awesome. It looks like, it just looks so cool and unique.
It looks like a game I'd sink a lot of time into.
Yeah. I would like to see, I want to see some more Mad Max. I'm excited for it. I don't know if you guys are too excited, but.
I'm a mixed bag. I'm waiting with hopes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot to live up to.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
I was pretty negative towards it, what with it releasing the same day as Metal Gear. I thought that they were just making terrible decisions, and their original trailer was crap, but then they released that new trailer, and it was kind of awkward, but, like, pretty cool. And then the movie came out, and right as I was like, yeah, the new Mad Max game should be good, the movie was just, like, you know, just is totally different from what they showed in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's like, how... I just got out of that movie a couple times, so, like going into that game where it's just way more tame and it's just you driving around could be good. Like we were saying, it could be, like, the game is just what Mad Max does in his... or what Max does in his time between the movies.
You're right, between crazy fucking over-the-top gasoline guzzling. yeah
And so it's like, you know, the big thing was how are they going to handle the world and the characters in it when they're all very finely crafted and detailed. Having anything else would be very you know, it's, we haven't seen a lot of the world of Mad Max, and there's a ton of mystery out there, and this game is this open world game showing like all the in-betweens, and it's like, man, I feel like that's something that could be easily messed up or generic or something if they didn't have the creator's intent, you know, going for them. But either way, I think with just the car mechanics in the game, I think that part can't really go wrong.
I agree.
The car part, the whole part with the car and you know, upgrading your Magnum Opus and stuff, and just how the car looks like it handles, that part looks sweet. So I'm with, you know, high hopes on that. The dialogue and all of the other stuff, though, that could be a disaster. Because, you know, the Just Cause devs are really good at handling open world sandbox, but they're terrible at storytelling. Like the amongst the worst.
Yeah. So. Well, let's hope that that's. Now that's a good point. I'd also like to see more Just Cause 3 at E3. I'd like to see more of what that's about. See it in action, not just a trailer.
Good 20-minute gameplay.
Now we are all really hoping, and at this point, everybody's going to be disappointed if Fallout 4 is not at E3.
Yeah.
I mean, except it's gotten to that point. It's probably the only game that hasn't been announced that everybody is so sure is going to get announced that they will be pissed if it's not. I mean, if Bethesda doesn't announce Fallout 4 in their conference, there's going to be a riot, I think.
Bethesda, the next Ubisoft!
I think that the lack of an announcement is what would actually turn our country into the capital wasteland.
I think... You know, it's going to piss me off to no end if it's something that I really don't want instead of Fallout 4. Like, you've been waiting for it. It's, what is that game I didn't like?
Elder Scrolls Online 2.
No, the Bioshock Thief-esque,
Rage?
No.
Dishonored?
Dishonored, yeah. Nice. Dishonored 2. If it's Dishonored 2, because it could totally... The game sold like hotcakes. People loved it for some reason. I did not love that game.
Yeah, that could... I mean, that could be. They're...
I thought it was okay. I didn't love it.
There was something about the aesthetic when I played it that just made me hate it. Like, just something about it that I just felt was... Just did not click with me.
Yeah, it was a good game, but it was a niche game and it didn't appeal. It wasn't like Fallout where it appealed to just everybody, whether they like RPGs or they like shooters or what, or they just don't even like games. I mean, I knew people that played Fallout 3 that didn't, like, up until that point didn't play games. It was just one of those games that just bridged the gap from it did everything well enough that you could just enjoy it no matter what kind of games you liked or if you even liked games to a lesser extent. It's just great.
It brought in a lot of this natural storytelling that the Fallout 1 and 2 games had.
Mm-hmm.
With the VAT system even almost gave it storytelling and combat, because that's kind of what the old isometric RPGs of the past had, is combat was really slow and drawn out to the point where you could like assess everything that was going on, and it felt like every battle meant something more than a quick skirmish.
That's a really good point.
Time. I love that kind of thing, and that was why I loved Fallout 1 before I played Fallout 3. I played like tons of the first Fallout.
Now, is Fallout 1 a first-person shooter?
No.
Fallout 1 was really old. It was isometric, like Baldur's Gate type thing. Mm-hmm. But it had a turn-based combat system that could be activated anywhere, and it was basically like a top-down VAT. So like you could select the body part, there was a percentage chance of it hitting, but there was like those point and click or those isometric RPGs always went by like a D&D system of like dice rolling, almost to where your bullet could stray and hit something behind whoever you're aiming at based on your accuracy. And so there was all sorts of cool stories that would evolve from these slow, drawn-out combat that my friends would tell me about. Like, oh, man, I was hanging out in this casino, and there were these thugs there, and then there was all these prostitutes or whatever, and they both belonged to different factions, and I was friends with one of them, and I went to shoot one of the bad guys, and I accidentally shot one of my friends, and then one of the, so then that like all the prostitutes and the pimps like whipped out weapons and started fighting me, and then all the thugs started fighting them, and all out war ensued. Or in Fallout 2, there was children in the game, and so somebody accidentally killed a kid.
Oh shit!
They misfired and they like blew a kid's brains out, and everybody from that point on just was instantly aggressive, and you just had this horrible reputation as a child killer. Like, it was a part of the stats of the game's child killer, and you're like, no. Yeah, it was. It's I love that kind of slow, drawn out combat. And so that's something that was surprising, that people were like, oh, Fallout 3 is Oblivion with guns. That was the complaint at the time, but what they didn't get was that the VAT system really made it feel like a Fallout game. Other, without that, it wouldn't be nearly as much.
Yeah.
But they did an excellent job, and I feel like no matter what they do, even if it's running on the Skyrim engine, I would hope for a big step up, but even if they just made more Fallout that's, you know, a lot prettier, but, you know, just more of the same thing, it would still be good. Whereas if they were to do that with Elder Scrolls, I would be pissed. They need to freaking evolve that one, because that one doesn't work anymore. Like, I don't think Skyrim worked. Like, a lot of other people would disagree with me on that, but Skyrim was version 1.5 of Oblivion, which it just seems like they haven't thought outside the box on that one for far too long.
Yeah, I'd like to see some pretty dramatic engine changes when they finally do introduce a new game, whether it is Skyrim or whether it is a sequel to an Elder Scrolls game or a Fallout game.
So they really need it, but they've never done it. They've never done a good engine. So I can't imagine what Bethesda would do that isn't their normal thing, because they've never not done their normal thing, and their normal thing's getting pretty outdated. Yet it sells like hotcakes. They're in a really weird situation right now.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that Oblivion was for its time, it was pretty technically impressive.
It was, you're right.
But after that, they didn't really evolve. And I remember before Skyrim came out, reading so much about how they were making a lot of fundamental changes to the engine and stuff. And then I played it and I was like, I mean, it's really not that much different.
Yeah, you know, they just
added animations. They kind of just band-aided it.
I mean, that it's a lot less, say, whimsical than Oblivion. I like the artistic direction they took Skyrim. It was much more, you know, Norse, Scottish, Conan the Barbarian-ish, when Oblivion was, again, a lot more whimsical and more Lord of the Rings. I do like that aspect.
I love the Elder Scrolls lore more than any fantasy game's original lore. I'm a big fan. The lore in Elder Scrolls is so ridiculously deep. It's really the Middle Earth of video games, because the source material for it is just really well thought out and original. It's really weird. Like, the places that Elder Scrolls games go are very, very unique and weird. So, like, Morrowind was really weird. Everything was very alien and strange and unique and, you know, exotic, crazy alien-like plants and monsters, and it's just got its own cool, creepy atmosphere. And Oblivion is just kind of, it's in the capital city, you know, it's in the Minas Tirith kind of thing, you know, so it's got, you know, fantasy generic farmland and forests, and I like that kind of thing. It's simple and vanilla, but it had the weird parts still in it as a part of, like, the quests. Like, when you
still get turned into a vampire and spend, like, I don't know, 16 hours trying to cure yourself.
Yeah. Or did you ever do the Shivering Isles?
No.
The Shivering Isles, it's amazing. Yeah, it's my favorite part of Oblivion. But the Shivering Isles was basically what Morrowind was. It was crazy. It was really weird. Skyrim I didn't like, because it felt like it was... And while Skyrim was actually like this, I felt like I was spending the whole game in a world I'd already seen before, where it's all Norse mythology. There's dragons. There's a focus on dragons. I don't care about dragons. Like, they're okay, but they always take the spotlight. They're just big lizards. Like, in Elder Scrolls games, they always focus on Daedric gods, and they all own their own plane of oblivion. You know, there's the god of madness who's got this spectral plane that you can go to, and it's just crazy. That's what Shivering Isles is. And, you know, each one has got their own little place. And so, like, all the Elder Scrolls games kind of carry that, like, the world kind of runs on that weirdness and that craziness. And Skyrim is just, it's very typical. It's very Norse mythology with dragons, and it's just focusing on things that we've already seen in other works of fantasy. Whereas even pretty generic Oblivion still had a lot of that uniqueness to it, if you really dug deep. But Skyrim still had moments. It had a lot of really good moments, but
yeah.
But for the most part, I was sick of hearing all of the Viking Norse stuff after a while.
How long ago did New Vegas come out? 2008, right?
2010. 2008 was Fallout 3.
Oh, wow, okay. 2010. So it's still been 5 years.
Yeah.
It seems like so much longer than that.
It does. It seems like a what?
I guess that's just a testament to how much we missed that series.
Well, when New Vegas came out, like, I remember I was at PAX and we saw it, and I remember thinking of how ugly the game looked.
Because it looked the fucking same. I mean, it looked the exact same as Fallout 3.
It looked worse, to be honest. And even though I liked the game more, it looked a lot more brown and orange, and yeah, the color palette was really unappealing, and somehow it looked worse than Fallout 3, and I just thought that the design of the world looked atrocious.
They even reused assets.
Yeah, it was like, I just remember being very unimpressed until long after it was like maybe was the a same year way. That the game came out. I got into it and I was like, wow, yeah, I don't know what I was missing.
They did present a lot of possibilities and a lot more. It seems to me that there's a lot more different paths and routes that you can take in New Vegas than you could in Fallout 3. So yeah, that's one big thing that I think they went on.
I loved the game. It was just it was a weird game because it came at a time when the new generation of consoles was the consoles in general, like, you were getting a lot of games that were pushing the technical boundaries of the consoles, and then you got a game that came along like New Vegas that was literally the same as Fallout 3 from every aspect technically. It was just put in a different, you know, a different setting and everything, and I think that people, when they first saw that, were kind of turned off, but then afterwards, and I was the same way as you, Johnny, like, when I first heard of it and first saw it and everything, I wasn't impressed, and I wasn't all that excited for it. And then later on down the road, I played it and just loved it. I mean, yeah, I had a ton of fun with it.
It was kind of like the Wolfenstein New Order of that year. It was just like, it came out, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, I thought it was weak. And then, like, a year later, I'm like, oh, what? Wait, it's like, really freaking good?
Yeah.
It's so, like, and then everybody kind of recognized that. There isn't really anybody that dislikes it like it was when it came out. It's weird.
Yeah,
it's
like, nobody that played it, I mean, didn't, like, disliked it. It was just, you know, there was people that didn't play it, obviously. But, yeah, I don't know anybody that played that that didn't like it. And I honestly can't think of anybody that didn't even like it more than Fallout 3. I mean, I liked it more than Fallout 3.
I love the Wild West sort of
motif, theme. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. So let me ask you this, guys. Phil, I'll ask you first. Who do you think, without knowing anything about E3, who do you think is going to come away as the, I guess, with the most impressive conference? And we'll include Nintendo in this because they're not having a conference, but they are having like a their own little, you know, Nintendo Direct style video thing. So Nintendo counts, you know, and Bethesda and then Square Enix are having their own conference, and then there's going to be a PC gaming conference as well. So with that said, Phil, who do you think is going to win and why? And then
is this between Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, or between Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, and Bethesda?
It's between anybody that's having a conference. Who do you think is going to have the most impressive conference that's going to get people excited?
Well, I mean, you did mention earlier how much people will rage if there is no Fallout 4. So, I mean, that could be the thing that everybody is talking about. But then at the same time, Xbox One, Microsoft hasn't been doing so great as of lately, so they've got a lot to prove. Am I correct? And this E3 could be their moment, but Sony they're probably going to know that as well, so they're not going to be pulling any punches either. We'll say I think it's going to be Fallout 4.
You think it's going to be Bethesda?
Yeah,
I gotcha. Man, if they had like a play. Not just a trailer for Fallout 4, but they actually came out with some live gameplay. The place would go crazy.
There's a point. So yeah, if it's just a trailer, then nobody's gonna make that much of a buzz about it. Then it might be Xbox One.
I gotcha. Might be Microsoft.
Yeah, it might be Microsoft.
What do you think, Johnny?
I think Nintendo, because Nintendo there's a lot. You could say, like, there are games that could win a press conference, sort of, but I don't think anybody's press conference is going to be perfect like Nintendo's usually is.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to say Nintendo, because they don't have, like, anything on the horizon. Last E3 they announced was pretty much, like, a whole year forecast. I love how their press conferences is just, like, it's a video. It's not something that, for the shareholders. So it's very personal and consumer based. So they're releasing a lot of cool gameplay, and that's literally all it is. They waste no time, and they do a lot of good reveals. So I think that Nintendo they always seem to have a lot up their sleeve, and a really fun show to watch. But Microsoft needs to pull out a bunch of stuff to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be. They could have some cool tricks up their sleeve. You know, they got some big rare stuff they're going to announce.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I don't think that they're going to be the best, because they haven't even been close to it, and their press conferences are usually kind of annoying. Bethesda, I can't imagine really being the best just because of one game, because I can't imagine anything else that Bethesda would announce that would make me that excited. Showing Doom 3 being pretty cool and Fallout 4 being good would be like, oh, amazing. But everything else would just be kind of like, okay, new Elder Scrolls Online expansion.
God, what if they came out and announced a new Elder Scrolls and a new Fallout? That would be crazy.
That would be something. Stryker, are you calling me?
Am I calling you? No.
It says Ryan Beamer's Skype call.
Now I'm trying now, as far as Microsoft, because I don't even have an Xbox, but I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible since I am a Sony guy.
Yeah, I think that, to be honest, I think that Microsoft is going to come away with the strongest conference, and the only reason I think that is just because I think that their back has been against the wall for a while now, and I think they realize that and understand that. Now, keep in mind that this whole negative outlook on Microsoft came from an E3, for all intents and purposes. Now, part of that was from some announcements that came out before E3 and stuff, but they lost to Sony in a big way at an E3 and haven't really made up that ground yet. And I think that they realize how big of a deal it is, and there's going to be the possible Rare project that's happening, and then maybe some exclusives. They've said in the past that they have, X amount of exclusives in the works. And, like I said before, I want to see a lot of new IPs, and I would hope to see that from every conference. I think that maybe Sony, I think that Project Morpheus is going to be a big part of their conference. And what do you guys think about that? I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, I have an Oculus Rift, so I follow the VR scene pretty closely. We were talking about this last week, the whole You know, making the VR thing consumer so quickly, I think is a terrible idea. They're jumping on the exclusive bandwagon. They're trying to get their VR thing on the PS4 before anybody else, just so they can have a jump on it. Maybe financially it'll do okay, but I suspect it's going to be worse than the Move was, and the Move was a huge disaster.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I can't imagine this being a good thing, because you have to, there's multiple problems here. One, this is in the pioneering era for virtual reality games. There really aren't any virtual reality games, so to speak, at the moment, and nobody knows how to do them. Nobody knows how to implement them easily. Like, we're learning this, and so that needs to be open source. That needs to be freely yes. available to everybody. You cannot make it console specific. In fact, making it on a console right now is a terrible idea as well, because you need powerful PC hardware to run a high frame rate. Like, you go like 80 frames per second or 120 frames per second on this, on these virtual reality goggles, because you need to make it smooth. If you don't have it in a high resolution and a high frame rate, like, that virtual reality is the most important part, the most, like, the part that makes it easier to sit in it for a long time, easier to have your eyes adjust. You need high frame rate and high resolution. Otherwise, you're going to have screen door effect and sort of that motion sickness kind of thing that you get when you're, or car sick kind of feeling. Ugh. And so early version of the Oculus had that problem. They're running 720p and they're at a lower frame rate, 720p per eye. And I believe Morpheus was advertising like two different lenses. There's no way this can be a good idea. The Steam headset's coming out this year. It's going to blow it away because it's going to be on the PC. It's going to be open source. It's going to have two lenses, whereas the Oculus has one. It's going to have, you know, there's a whole bunch of facets to this that just, Project Morpheus is a terrible idea right now. They need to wait, but they're not, because they want to get the jump on it and get their exclusivity. But they're probably going to have like two games on it, some gimmicky crap. They're going to force some developers to make some high budget mess.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that without, with making it consumer so early in the technology's lifespan, the best that you're going to get is like a, you know, the Morpheus Sports.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's cool because they're trying to popularize VR quickly, and that's great. But I don't think we're ready for that yet, you know, and I don't think that Sony's hardware is ready for that either.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons why that just sounds like a bad idea. But
what do you think, Phil? Honestly,
I've seen the Oculus Rift. It looks interesting. It looks like you can play, you know, a lot of what are scary games on it right now, including Isolation. It's one of the last things that, as far as, you know, Sony's Morpheus goes, it's one of the last things I'm looking forward to.
Not really big on your list. It's not something.
Not really big on my list. I don't care too much. And I think that Johnny definitely has a point. You two have a good point. They're just trying to beat everyone else to it, but it's not the right time to do it.
Yeah, it needs more time in the oven.
Yes. Phil, now the thing with Phil is he wants it to be open source so he can get his porn simulations.
You know, they do have some good ones out already. I can give you a good list of about 10, Phil, if that's what you want. I kid you not, there's actually a subreddit called NSFW Oculus or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And it's relatively popular.
Interesting.
It's like the first thing that people who got it.
I mean, of course that's going to be the most, it makes sense. I mean, that's just kind of a natural progression of any virtual reality, I feel like, so.
Yeah, best part of my investment so far.
Well, guys, was there any other E3 stuff that you wanted to talk about? Any predictions or anything?
I think we covered the gist of it.
Yeah, I think we covered the big name games that we want to see. And
I want to see Xenoblade get a release date. But,
oh, yeah, there you go.
and new Zelda gameplay.
Yeah, I'd love to see some Zelda gameplay.
Because that's
looks
pretty
really
huge.
Good.
Yeah, well, we kind of know like what they're going for with that tiny little snippet. But we don't really, because Like I like Zelda, but I don't like Zelda. Like, I love all of the charm and the world and the music and everything. I don't care for how incredibly basic the gameplay is. In fact, I hate it. I tried getting into Wind Waker recently, and I loved literally everything about it, and I could not play it. Like, the dungeons were so headache-inducing and boring. I don't understand it at all. It's like Little Tykes, my first RPG or something. Like, I don't understand how it's got this massive legacy when every game is the same thing. Like, they dump a boatload of charm into each game that I just love. And then, like, the sense of adventure and all that stuff is just amazing. But the actual, like, combat and puzzle solving just drives me crazy. So I really hope that this new one, people are like, oh, it's going to be like Zelda meets Skyrim, because they showed that, you know, grand vista at the end of the trailer. And I don't think it's going to be like that, because that doesn't make any sense. I think that Zelda fans have opinions that don't make sense, like how they wanted a TV show on Netflix. But the I could see the game hopefully changing its gameplay formula, but keeping it very Zelda, but making it more open, and less, because really they haven't evolved since I would say Ocarina of Time, but really Ocarina of Time is just a 3D version of A Link to the Past. So really every Zelda game's just been like a slightly advanced Link to the Past.
Yeah.
With the same mechanics since 1993 or whatever.
I'd like to see it in New Zelda. And these are just two crazy ideas I thought of. At my fantasy E3, which is not going to happen, they would announce a new King of Fighters, and they would announce a new Prince of Persia.
Oh, weird.
That's my fantasy E3 that I just thought of in my head.
Not weird.
you're a freak.
Like a sequel to the second game, right?
What'd you say?
And it was kind of like Assassin's Creed.
Which one?
The last one.
The last one was like cell shaded, and it was
One was the movie game.
Oh yeah, the last one was the movie game, which is actually not bad. It was a decent game, but it was not great. It just didn't felt like it had as much effort put into it as the past titles. So I would love to. I love that series. I love that whole franchise.
The reason it had a lot of charm to it. Did you played the cell shaded one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I got really far into it, and then I lost all the memory on it and never went back to it. But I remember it being really fun.
Well, so it was.
But you couldn't die, and I didn't like that.
There was a lot of bad, really terrible game decisions that made it.
I much prefer the Sands trilogy than I do that game. And preferably the first one, Sands of Time. I didn't like when they went more angsty and mature and stuff. Yeah. I would, if that series turned into if they took like that kind of cel-shaded and sort of fantasy charm and made their own kind of Assassin's Creed type style series out of it. And what I mean by that is just a more open type of Prince of Persia. I would love that if they took the charm of the series and put that in a franchise, not as serious and not as, you know, like worried about telling a historical story, just like a fun type of open world, maybe kind of game.
Done that by now.
You would think so.
But the reboot of the last reboot was, I mean, it was a failure. I believe it sold poorly and was forgotten pretty quickly. I played most of it. And, like, I'm not really into platformers. I'm really bad at them. But that game held your hand so much that, like, I felt like I wasn't even really playing it. Like, I was kind of, like, pushing the stick forward, and it won for me. And if I ever lost, she'd hold out her hand and throw me right back where I was. So it had a lot of charm to the story and graphics, and I liked the design of everything and the music, and the characters are good. I just wish that they had rethought the entire gameplay.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, guys, that is our E3 extravaganza. I figure with we took up a big chunk of time on that, but let's just for a couple of minutes. Doesn't have to be too long. We'll get more into it when we record our next episode. But let's just touch on our initial impressions of The Witcher 3, since we're all playing it. It just came out this last week. It's fresh on everybody's minds, and mm-hmm. I'm sure we all have our opinions on it. So hit me with it. What are your guys' initial impressions so far? I guess they're not so initial now because we've played it so much. But
I got like 20 hours on it. Yeah, well, the first 20 hours of the game, I think it's okay. it's so easy to call it one of the best games of the year, or maybe one of the best games. This is one of the best Western RPGs of the decade, if not amongst the best, in the top three. I would debate any hardcore RPG fan, because I've played all the recent RPGs, and the biggest reason for this is not in anything that we saw in the previews for the game. What's surprising me the most about it, consistently, even since we last spoke, is the quest writing never takes a backseat
ever. Absolutely.
For any part of the game.
It can take you down, you know, a longer path than you would expect. You know, you team up with the sorceress who, you know, worked for Foltest. What was her name again?
Kira.
Kira. Well, anyway, you can either choose to whatever help her out with, you know, finding the masked elf or whatever, and then just go on your way, or you can go down this other path and do like three other missions with her, which I thought was a pleasant surprise and added a lot of depth. And also, have any of you guys, did you guys kill or let Litho live in The Witcher 2?
Okay, now, before you continue that, Stryker, have you encountered any characters from The Witcher 2?
I still haven't, no.
I don't want you to spoil that one.
Yeah, we'll stay away from spoilers for this, but...
Because that one was pretty unexpected. But
I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to.
That's okay.
Well, there's no details yet, though, so... But that if you did what I think you were talking about, then I very much enjoyed that a lot.
I'll just say I let him live in the second game, and that pays off.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't actually think you can kill him in the second game.
You can, right?
No, because if you fight him, you like you slice a gash open, and he kind of
slice him in the chest, and then just kind of leave him there. That's what I did.
Yeah,
I mean, but it has no finality to it.
It makes it seem like he's not dead. Yes. But because of how freaking beefy he is, like a slice of the chest doesn't seem.
It doesn't even penetrate his skin because his just so much muscle and.
Yeah. Like, oh, you cut muscle.
Ow, I bruised.
the game the quest writing it's like comparing it because I play tons of RPGs and my favorite parts of RPGs are always like, well, I remember this quest was really good and there's this highlight to the game. You know, Elder Scrolls is like that. You know, a lot of quests in Oblivion are pretty bland, but then there were a lot of surprising ones, kind of like in this game where you'd start it off and it would be something you don't expect and it would be really memorable. Almost every RPG that's good has that. But they have them in spurts, which is what makes like some of my favorite previously favorite RPGs. Witcher 3 never stops. It's just like constantly interesting. It's constantly they didn't ever develop a formula.
Every quest so far that I've done, however small it is, even just a non-quest where I'm just interacting with another, you know, NPC or something, is handled with so much care and so much effort that it's just incredible.
They all have a purpose. They all develop the world in some slight way. They all make you usually you end up doing something in the in terms of gameplay that's like it just doesn't feel like it's a part of some recycled, you know, like it doesn't feel like you've done this before, which is a problem that a lot of RPGs have is, you know, we got to make 40 hours of, or 80 hours of gameplay. Let's make it to where you're doing the same thing over and over again, but with different story attached. This game doesn't feel like that. It feels like they try to keep it fresh with every twist and turn of the quests. And
right.
They definitely thought very hard.
They put a lot of thought into quality, and I really think it shows. And yeah, I understand that you guys you downloaded the digital version, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so I got the physical copy, and I just found out like a week ago after we recorded that not only did I get a thank you letter from the developers for buying the game, I wound up with the world map, a beautifully illustrated world map. Looks great, and I always love having world maps with a game like Witcher or Red Dead or Grand Theft Auto. Of course, the manual, the compendium to the Witcher universe, two stickers, and the complete Witcher soundtrack.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's fucking sick.
I love it. The digital version comes with tons of stuff too, like the
goodies.
Goodies, yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's just a testament to CD Projekt Red and how they want to please their customers.
Yes,
and
definitely
the combat in the game is another thing I want to talk about, because in Witcher 2 the combat was hard for me to get into. Like, I like the
same
idea
here
of it.
Same here.
But yeah, I had to play it on easy because on normal, like, you had to use all the mechanics, but I couldn't get comfortable with them at all. So I was just playing win mode. But this game, I'm playing it on normal, and I'm almost willing to go up to hard because I'm having such a good time. And like, as I play more, I use everything, every mechanic. I'm drinking potions. I'm using bombs, all of my spells. I'm using everything that the game's giving me, which is, in all of my favorite games, I use everything that the games give me. And
yeah, the fighting system is so much more intuitive. And here's another thing. There's not too often there'll be a decapitation, but the gore is so detailed. Now,
and so satisfying.
Have you fought any low level guys that are like a lot lower level than you?
I have. Oh,
if
God.
You guys that are like five levels or lower that are like bandits, you will decapitate all of them.
Yeah, and it's fantastic.
I hate archers, right? I hate archers so freaking much. And once I decided, fuck it, and I threw a bomb at the bastard and just blew him to shit.
The bombs are so
game.
Yeah. Yeah, all of the grape shot bomb is always surprising. Like, I just feel like it's like a little grenade, like a little poof or something, but no, it's some heavy damage.
If you're too close, it'll hurt you.
Yeah, it's fucking loud, too.
Because it's a Witcher game, there's a lot of awkward design decisions. There are a few things I don't like the inventory is still kind of a mess, how they sort all the books and the usable items in one section. And if you ever wanted to read the books, well, good luck sorting that. And if you ever wanted to use your consumable items, you have to scroll through all of your books that you've collected just to get to them. There's a lot of poor decisions there that'll hopefully get patched. That people are complaining about. The movement is kind of awkward for like slowly turning and slowly walking is just like he just doesn't want to do it. It's like he either moves like a ton or not at all.
Right.
And having the A button to pick up everything is the same as lighting candles and opening doors and climbing ladders. Makes for a lot of awkward, but to me the worst part of the game, and these are all just like the smallest nitpicks that mean nothing. I don't like the encumbering system. I've never liked that. In The Witcher 2, they had a chest you could store stuff in.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's not in this game, and this, so I could carry 60 pounds. I was at 68 pounds because weapons and armor weigh a ton, but they're also worth the most money. So I needed to sell them. So here I'm going into Novigrad, the big city, for the first time. I'd never been in this city before. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to be able to sell some stuff. And I'm walking through it slowly, which is atmospheric. But, you know, you have to walk when you're in an encumbered right. state. I walk over to the blacksmith shop, and I talk to the blacksmith to sell my stuff. They usually have the most money. And when I talk to the blacksmith, he's like, oh, I'm out of business. When he starts, yeah, he starts a quest. He's like, it's literally Kill Bill. His last name is like Hattori, and he's used to make like the finest swords, and now he just runs a pastry shop. And
oh, that's awesome.
It's like the exact, he takes you upstairs to his like sword room, just like in Kill Bill. But you're supposed to like help him get back into the business, but he won't buy anything from you until you do all this. But he's like, oh, I'll meet you tonight at this time, and you'll help me. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I accept the quest, and I'm like, all right, I got until tonight to sell this stuff. Otherwise, I can't do this quest, and it'll fail. So I'm walking around the city. I'm like, okay, so there's three merchants. I went to one. It was a banker. I don't know. You can't sell anything to him. I'm like, okay. And they don't specify that. They all have the same little, like, bag for an icon.
So now I walk over. You can fast travel when you're overburdened.
Yeah, but then the time goes by. Right. I won't be able to do the quest.
Right.
And so then I walk over to the other side of the city. This is a huge city, and the merchants are completely separated from each other. I walk over to this other merchant, and he's under attack by bandits, and it's a quest. And I'm like, okay. So I kill the bandits, and the merchant's like, oh, thank you. So even though he had a little merchant symbol over him, you talk to him, and he's like, what do you want? Like, he doesn't do anything. He just walks away. And then the merchant's symbol disappears. So there is literally no merchants in the entire city of Novigrad. And there's like three, there's another merchant that was also had a similar quest where he also disappeared. So you can't sell anything in the capital city in this game. What were they thinking? So this incredibly specific, terrible luck that I had caused me to fail the quest because I had to travel back to another town.
I do miss the storage very much, but I'm with you guys so far. I absolutely am just loving every minute of it. Few small nitpicks and stuff, but I just it's amazing.
The grand scheme of things, like, it hasn't had a single fault.
Yes, I agree.
It's crazy. It's so impressive because it's like usually this much attention to detail and this much fine-tuned, like, you know, effort. It makes for a lot shorter and smaller of a game.
Yes, that's a really good point. It fits so much quality than what you would expect from this big of a game. So
yeah.
Well, guys, that is our episode, version 2.0. Thank you for joining me for our E3 extravaganza. This will be fun to revisit once E3 actually happens and they announce a new Prince of Persia game. You guys have anything else?
I'm good. I'm gonna play Go Home.
I'm going to go play some Witcher.
Me too. All
right, let's go play some Witcher. Thank you for listening, everybody. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/pixelchickenpodcast. Follow us on Twitter. That's @pixel_chicken. Send Phil some emails. That's pixelchickenpodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next week.
Send Phil dick pics, please.
Peace.